Want to convene the April 2nd, 2013 session of the House Committee on Ag and Natural Resources. And welcome to all. We have a long list of bills today. Some that work sessions should go fairly quickly. We have long public hearings with the subject of cougars, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2624 and House Bill 3395, and would like to call forward, where's Representative Springer? There she is, Representative Springer. Good morning, and welcome to our committee this morning.
It's nice to see all of you. I miss this committee. This is a fun committee to be on.
All right. If you would like to hold just for a moment, I'm going to have Beth give us a very brief summation of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the first bill, House Bill 2624, would exempt counties from the applicability of the statute banning the use of dogs to hunt black bears or cougars and the use of bait to hunt black bears if voters in the county approve a measure proposed by initiative petition or referred to the people by the governing body of the county. The second bill, House Bill 3395, would authorize the Fish and Wildlife Commission to create a pilot program allowing people to use one or more dogs to hunt cougars.
Thank you very much. And our colleague, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sherry Springer, State Representative from House District 17. So that looks like Scio, Lebanon, Sweet Home, Detroit, and a lot of other places in between. Very rural area. And that's why I bring you this bill, House Bill 3395, today. This is not a new bill. Many of you will, or some of you will recognize this from the last session, the 2011 session. As you may or may not know, I believe we have a cougar problem in the state of Oregon. Not that we have cougars, but that we have lost the ability to manage the population. There's something called the Cougar Management Plan for the state of Oregon. Department of Fish and Wildlife implements that. I'm not looking to change that whatsoever. What I am looking to do is add a tool to the toolbox for ODFMW. So what occurs in the state right now, as you know from Measure 18, back in the mid-90s, the ballot measure that was passed in the state that banned the use of hunting cougars and bear with hounds. Thank you. And since then, the population is estimated to have at least doubled in that time, roughly 6,000 cougars. Now, if somebody tells you they have an exact number, I don't know how they can do that, because you don't go out and you don't point 1, 2, 3 and count cougars. That is an estimate. However, I think it is a very conservative estimate. So what this bill looks at doing is setting up a pilot project that's mirrored quite closely to what happened up in Washington State. And they had a similar situation. They implemented this program, and they found a decrease in cougar encounters. What I mean by that is certainly I have story after story that I'm not going to regale you with this morning about kids in bus stops and their bus shelters seeing cougars. I have a district, they couldn't be here this morning, that actually one of their state, or not their state, their district vehicles, their transportation vehicles, it was a Suburban, because sometimes we use those where I'm at, and had a kid in there, and they hit a cougar that ran out in front of them. So this is not a perceived problem. This is not something that we think is going to occur. This is something that is occurring right now. So what this project does is, it does sunset, it allows the Department of Fish and Wildlife in counties that feel they have a problem, and that just isn't as simple as we have cougars and I think it's a problem, but there's documented encounters, they go through a process. If there's a county that has a high incidence of encounters with cougars, they can decide as a governing body, so it most likely is going to be the county commissioners in each county, can decide they want to participate in this program. So counties that don't want to do this, don't do it. It's that simple. If you don't like this and you don't want to do it, don't do it. But please allow those of us where ballot measure 18 didn't pass, I mean it passed statewide, but certainly the numbers in my district were really low, allow us to manage our issues our way in a very appropriate way. So if a county opts in to this pilot project, then the Department of Fish and Wildlife will issue X amount of tags based on the cougar management plan. It doesn't change that plan. They issue those tags, and people can hunt with hounds in that area. So that has been done about three different hunting areas in our state, and guess what they found? It decreased the amount of cougars. It decreased the amount of game deaths. There's estimated one large game animal killed per cougar per week in the state. And we wonder why we're having a hard time managing our deer and elk population. Certainly that could be a criteria. So once these tags are issued, then people are allowed to hunt cougars with hounds in this county. So I come up against a lot of times, how does it feel to try to overturn the will of the voters? Interesting question. Two answers to that. Number one, I'm looking at the will of the voters in my area. Number two, how often do we institute state policy and do not revisit it for 14 or 15 years and see if it's working? And that's what we're looking to do with this pilot project. The other thing that I often hear is, how are we managing the population now? Well, I would say we're not managing it very well, number one. And number two, we are already hunting with hounds in this state. And we passed a bill just, 2 weeks ago out of the House floor that took care of the sunset on a bill that allowed us to do that. Department of Fish and Wildlife hires agents of the state. They hire houndsmen with dogs to hunt specific cougars. We're already doing it. We're just paying an estimate $100,000 a year to have people do this. I would like to change that to a revenue stream. And I know that there's people, because they're knocking down my door, literally coming to my house to tell me, why don't you let us buy a tag and pay you to do this? That seems pretty reasonable to me. So there's a lot more I could say about this bill, but I know that each one of you have some familiarity with this bill. You have an understanding of it. It's not a new bill in this building, so I'll certainly answer any questions that you have. And I know there's a bunch of people behind me that want to testify on this. So I'll entertain any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for our colleague?
Thank you.
Representative Reardon, please.
Thank you. I don't have a lot of experience with cougars. We've seen an occasional deer, maybe a coyote where I live, running up and down the streets. They look pretty happy. We use the word encounter. Could you elaborate on what an encounter means? If you're just waving it to cougars that goes by, or are they actually attacking kids in bus stops or what? I just want a little clarity on that, please.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Reardon, I'm not going to give you Webster's definition of encounter by any means. I suppose a counter could be called waving, but I got to tell you, if I see a cougar and I'm not in my house or my vehicle, I'm scared. It's that simple. These encounters, like I said, have included bus drivers, a police officer in Ashland that hit one with his patrol car, injured the cougar, chased the cougar, if you will, with his vehicle to a spot where he could finally stop the cougar and shoot it safely near a park, a city park. These encounters include livestock loss. So many of my neighbors, in fact, cougars have been seen a quarter of a mile from my house. Many of these people have lost either calves, sheep, and, of course, lambs, even had horses killed or had to be put down as a result of this. And so I've had several folks say to me, well, you know, that's the cost of doing business. You know, you're just going to lose a few sheep, few calves. Well, I would ask you to put yourself in the shoes of many of the folks in my district. And you show up at your business in the morning, and you unlock the doors, and you go in, and you notice that all your equipment is destroyed. Somebody's come in, destroyed your equipment, and it's left there in a pile, and you can call insurance maybe, but that that is the same thing that's occurring to many of my neighbors, many of the ranchers in that area. They show up, they have this death, and people say, well, you need to deal with that. That's the cost of doing business. I would say that's not the cost of doing business. And many people have said, well, why don't you? I love this. First time I worked this bill in the building, somebody walked. I was going around, and I don't even remember who the person was, but it was certainly somebody that wasn't from rural Oregon. And I said, would you like to sign on my bill? They asked me to explain it a little bit. And then they said, oh, so the Cougars are getting the livestock. Yeah. Well, your people just need to fix their fences. Kind of went, okay, my people need to fix their fences. I said, these are cats. Fixed fences don't take care of it. Well, then your people need to put the sheep in the barn at night. We're talking 500 head of sheep out there. You don't put them in the barn at night. So this is not careless people not taking care of their responsibilities. This is a wild animal that the population has exploded in the last few years. So, Representative Rudin, did I answer your question as far as an encounter? Okay, thank you.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rudin, we had a situation down in Cave Junction where a cat had followed these young ladies, these grade school kids, home, and Papa had to come out of his house and shoot the cougar in the yard. So that's an encounter. So, and we've also had them in East Medford where they're setting up on the side of the hill watching traffic go by, which, you know, they weren't bothering anyone, but still, that's in the city limits of Medford.
Yeah, and that's very helpful to understand that.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Oh, Chair Witt, Representative Rudin, I come from a rural part of the state also, and I want to thank the representative for bringing this bill. I think it's a very important bill for those of us who have constituents in rural parts. We spend a lot of time down on the Rogue River and have a home down at Agnes. And a few years ago, I have a neighbor across the creek who has sheep, and the sheep are penned at night. And we have an apple orchard, and we had kids sleeping out under the trees. It was a lovely summer evening, and a cat came in that night and killed 12 sheep in my neighbor's pen right across the creek from our house. And he actually came back the next night to finish his job. And we had to actually take some measures to take care of that cat because it was coming in very closely and doing a great deal of damage. And it just killed 12 sheep because it felt like it. It didn't take it to feed. It grabbed one for food, drug it over the fence, and they do go through fences very, very carefully without a lot of difficulty. Things have changed. They are a little bit different, and encounters can be pretty serious out in the rural parts of the country. So I think this is an important bill to allow those of us that have issues that we're facing, as the representative said, a tool in the toolbox to deal with it in parts of the state where it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yes, please.
Thank you. The other thing that I want to mention about that, Representative Murphy, there is a constituent in my district up in the Mill City area. She came out one morning take her kids to school, and there was a cougar under her minivan. She had to wait in the house until the cougar left, and she called a few people, and they tried to scare the cougar away. This was actually in town, granted, small town, but it was still in town. That, to me, illustrates a bigger problem. We've always had cougars in this state, and that's great. I don't want to eradicate cougars. I absolutely don't. But what occurred for years is cougars had fear. They had fear of dogs. They had fear of people. They had fear because bad things would happen. What has occurred now is you can hunt cougars in the state, but it's a very ineffective method. They don't have these fears, and so they are coming closer and more into even some urban areas. Portland had one. Portland area just recently had one, I think, a week ago up there. And so it's the culture, if you will, that has changed, that has created these problems. And I hear over and over, well, nobody's been killed yet in Oregon. Is that what we're waiting for? I would hope not. The other thing that I would just throw out for consideration is, I've worked on this issue now, I don't know, several years. And I've heard all sorts of interesting things. And it's okay to disagree. We all disagree in this building. My goodness, I disagree with my husband on a fairly regular basis. That's going to occur. But cautiously listen to the information that you'll hear today. There is a lot of erroneous, just simply false information that has come forward at different times. I encourage you to check that out on your own. Just because it's said here doesn't mean it's factual. Check out anything that I've said. That's why I'm very cautious. Unless I can give an exact number that is backed up, I qualify it as such. But I would just caution against some of the information that will likely come forward as far as the legitimacy of it and the factual basis it comes from.
Any additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Representative Springer, thank you very, very much.
And thank you for accommodating my schedule, my committee schedule.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Pleased to have you with us here today. We'll stand at ease here just for a moment. Back on the record, and I'd like to call forward, please, Representative Gomberg. Good morning, and welcome to our committee this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be back. I apologize for running real quickly. It's that time of the season when we're in three or four different places at once. I'm David Gomberg from House District 10 out on the Central Oregon coast. As you know, we've got a lot of open spaces out there and an awful lot of animals that range them. I heard Representative Springer a few moments ago saying that sometimes we can disagree and disagree respectfully, and I think I may be disagreeing with her, although I didn't hear all of her presentation. But we talk an awful lot here in the building about the will of the voters. The will of the voters, and I think that the voters have spoken on this whole cougar hunting issue more than once and said that it's not something that they would endorse. And I really don't understand the notion that if we take a statewide vote on a matter, that then we come back and talk about the potential to repeal it on a county-by-county basis. I think the voters have addressed this. If we're interested in, quote, dangerous animals, unquote, I think we have procedures already in place to address that through Fish and Wildlife, and we're actually taking out more of those animals than ever before, certainly before the measures were imposed to reduce the hunting of them. So cougar complaints are down. Removing dangerous animals are up. I sure just simply don't see the need to start repealing statewide measures on a county-by-county basis to encourage sport hunting of these particular animals. And I just wanted to come in and put that on the record for you very quickly.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions? Representative Krieger, please.
We're looking right now about changing Measure 11. That was the will of the voters. And I can tell you this. There are people on both sides that think we can do that. People have voted daylight savings times out I don't know how many times. They voted out, I think, 11 times a sales tax, yet people are still talking about that. So issues come up over time as circumstances change. As far as the individual counties, if you took the counties out that don't have cougars, that initiative would have never passed. If you'd just taken Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas out, basically it passed everywhere else. So it's not the will of the whole state. The fact is, it's a disproportionate part of Oregon that's ill-affected. Now, on our tree farm, we had abundant wildlife. When the cougar population got to where it was just a few years ago, I went as long as a year and a half on a tree farm in Curry County and never saw a deer. And I was there, I know, we saw the tracks, a couple animals were actually taken. The population is, in fact, a population that you have to control. You can't have unlimited numbers of predators. You have to manage predators just like you do all other wildlife. And you need all the tools in the toolbox to do it. So, you know, a lot of times what I find in this issue and is that emotionalism drives the issue. Emotionalism should not be part of policy of managing wildlife. Some people don't want to cut a big tree, all these type of things. We need to have really good science to guide us. You know, and I look at this bill, a pilot project. We just did a pilot project regarding LCDC land use for Jackson, Josephine, and down that way for land use that the governor finally had to, I think, by executive order. So we do these changes, which are against the will of the people, but if the change that takes place over 15 years, what they voted on probably isn't the same conditions that we had at the time they voted.
Thank you very much. Representative Clem.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure you're referring to House Bill 2624, the county one, when you're referring to the county by county.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, Representative Clem.
Thank you. So that's my bill that you're testifying against, not Representative Springer, just for your reference. I'm the only sponsor of it. And just to give you a little history, before you got here, we had two votes on this issue, or three. It passed between 45 and 53 votes each time, and then never got a hearing in the Senate. And so this is a different approach. That's why we're trying it this way, because every time we pass these bills on a statewide basis, which they passed overwhelmingly, understanding that 19 years ago we had the first vote on this statewide, and then 17 years ago we had the second vote, and nothing since, the advocates from your side of the issue said, if you're going to do this, why don't you put it back out to the voters? Don't just do it legislatively. So this time I came up with another idea, since my other methods haven't worked repeatedly to get even a hearing in the Senate, and that is to say, you know, let's put it back out to the voters, but let's not pretend that every county in Oregon is the same. And some is what Washington does. Some counties have it, some don't. So we're trying to just go a different direction, which is why you're seeing this approach rather than 3395, which is similar to our past efforts and something I've also co-sponsored. But, you know, obviously you're welcome to your own opinion. I just thought I'd give you a small, presentation and why the logic behind this approach.
Anyone else?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I certainly appreciate the feedback from my friends at the on the committee and their historical perspective. Again, I would submit to you that we have a process in place for dealing with dangerous predators, and I think that process is working. If we're concerned about dangerous predators, I think we've got the situation in hand.
Thank you very, very much for your testimony. We certainly appreciate your appearance.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Good morning.
Folks, just so that there are probably a number of you that are in the audience and aren't familiar with our process, opened up this public hearing to be able to accommodate the schedules of a couple of legislators who have business elsewhere. We have some work sessions on a couple of bills that we're going to hopefully move through extremely quickly, and then we'll be back to this bill here shortly. So that's kind of the process that we're going to be using. With that, I'm going to temporarily close the public hearing on House Bills 2624 and 3395, and I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2249. Beth, if you'll tell us what that bill's about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the bill that would establish the Willamette River Basin Bonneville Power Administration Stewardship Fund. You heard the bill on February 21st. There is a -1 amendment which clarifies the purposes for which the funds may be spent and specifically prohibits the use of those funds to purchase property or easements. There is no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact. There was initially a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, but there is approval to remove that subsequent referral.
Very good. And with that, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen.
Thank you, Chairman Witt. Chair Witt, I move to adopt the -1 amendment dated March 13th, 2013.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the -1 amendment dated March 13th, 2013 to House Bill 2249. Is there any discussion on her motion? All right. Seeing none, is there any opposition to that motion? Seeing none, hearing none, adopted. Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Whit, I move House Bill 2249 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 2249 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Discussion on this motion. Yes, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank both the department and others who helped work out this amendment language that made several of us, I think, feel more comfortable that we're not going to be just acquire this fund is not to be used to acquire more properties or more easements, that this is for maintaining the things that are already been purchased or easements acquired from this other fund that's not in our control.
Thank you, Representative Clem. I think that's very helpful to a lot of folks. Appreciate that that clarification. Anyone else? I'm not seeing anyone. All right. With that, Clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitsitt.
No.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Aye.
Chair Whit.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the floor. I am going to need a carrier. Any volunteers? Who hasn't? Anyone from the committee here not carried a bill so far? I'm not seeing any. Representative Thompson, I see fingers pointing.
I would love to.
Thank you for your volunteerism. You're a great Oregonian, Representative Thompson. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2249. Also, just going to mention for public's consumption that we're going to carry over House Bill 2032 until Thursday, April 4th, and we're also going to carry over House Bill 3086 to Thursday, April 4th as well. Next bill up on our docket is House Bill 3199. I'm going to open a work session on that bill. Beth, could you tell us briefly what that one's about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3199 is the Sky Lantern bill that you heard on March 12th. There is a -3 amendment which replaces the bill. The -3 defines various terms and establishes that a person violates the section if during fire season declared for a forest protection district or part of a district, the person releases sky lanterns or discharges exploding targets or tracer ammunition on land inside the district or within 1/8 of a mile, or if a sky lantern is released by a person, if a sky lantern crosses above land inside a district or within 1/8 of a mile. Violation is a Class A violation. It also specifies who can issue citations for those violations. There is no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you very much. And colleagues, we have a -3 amendment. Mm-hmm. Folks had a chance to peruse that? Okay, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Whit, I move to adopt the -3 amendment dated March 28, 2013.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the -3 amendment dated March 28, 2013 to House Bill 3199. Is there discussion on her motion? I'm not seeing any. So adopted. Vice Chair McEwen again, please.
Chair Whit, I move House Bill 3199 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 3199 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on this motion. Yes, Representative Krieger.
Probably going to support the bill. However, there's an ongoing bureaucracy where agencies continue to find more reasons to regulate I take a look. I'm a forest landowner, so I'm not going to be doing any of these things during a time when there's a fire season on my own property. The fact that someone else might come on my property, I realize that that is a separate issue. But I just think at some point we have to be thinking about, is there ever an end to the government saying you can't or cannot do something on your property?
Thank you very much. Additional discussion on the motion. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. To follow up with what Representative Krieger was saying, I agree with that, but it's amazing how we have to put something so common sense into a bill in order to have people to prevent them. I mean, shouldn't everyone shoot a tracer round into a forest that's ready to burn anyway? I mean, it's amazing to me that we do that, but I guess that's the reason we do it, because somebody does it.
I personally live in terror after mowing my fields each year, and there what's left is a brown stubble. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Representative Krieger, please.
I'm looking at the Sky Lantern part of it, and I believe that you've interfered with Representative Unger's wedding plans.
Oh my goodness!
Just don't do it during fire season. It helps me win an argument that I was already having.
Representative Unger, if you feel that compelled to,
it's probably not best for me to carry.
Very good.
Take the emergency clause.
With that, is there any further discussion on the motion? I'm not seeing any. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative
Clem. Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
You got it. Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Thomas.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitsitt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Vice Chair
McKeelan. Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. Let's see here. Vice Chair McEwen, would you like to carry this bill?
I would be happy to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, I am going to close the work session on House Bill 3199 and shuffle some paper here for just a second. Yeah, let's see here.
Out of the question.
August 10th.
Okay, and with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2319. Beth, reminder about this one, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2319 would allow someone engaged in farming practice who believes that the planting, growing, or harvesting on nearby land of a GE commodity is interfering with their farming practices. There's no revenue impact. There is a fiscal statement, but it is simply to indicate that further analysis is required on the bill.
Thank you very much. And with that, Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, thank you. I move House Bill 2319 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 2319 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Discussion on her motion. Yes, Representative Krieger.
I would have liked to just seen the bill die, so I'll be a no.
Okay.
If it goes down there, it still isn't dead.
We understand that, Representative Krieger. Thank you. Thank you very much. Additional discussion.
Chair.
I'm sorry. Representative Clem.
I might just state once for all three of these that I did have a conversation with the Speaker's office, and they agreed to have some sort of work group that would be made up of equal parts members from this committee and the Rules Committee to see if there's anything we can work out on these bills or not. And I think we'll get a lot of deference in the Rules Committee because they got a lot of other stuff to do, and I think they'll be interested in the people who know something about ag weighing in on this.
Okay.
So, if anyone is interested in that so-called work group, or I don't know what to call it, but for convenience, that's what I'll refer to it. If you'd please let either of the vice chairs know of your desire to participate in that, I'd appreciate it. Thanks very much. Is there anything, any further discussion? Seeing none, Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Whitson.
No.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
No.
Representative Klem.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Rudin.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Espel.
No.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes, and the measure is sent to, where am I here? Rules Committee. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2319, and I'm going to open a, I closed the work session on House Bill 2319. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2715. Hold on here just a second. Vice Chair McEwen, please.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2715 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 2715 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Discussion on her motion. Seeing none, Maria, would you please call the roll again?
Representative Whitson.
No.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
No.
Representative
Klem. Aye.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Rudin.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Espel.
No.
Chair Witt.
Aye. The motion passes, and the measure is sent to the Committee on Rules. All right. And I close that with the work session on House Bill 2715. Hold the paper shuffle here for a second. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2736. Again, recognizing Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2736 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 2736 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Discussion on her motion. Seeing none, hearing none. Maria, once again, if you call the roll, please.
Representative Whitson.
No.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Rudin.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
No.
Representative Klem.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Espel.
No.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes, and the bill is sent to the Committee on Rules. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2736. Let's see, and that brings us back to... Folks, I told you it would go relatively quickly, so we're done with that process. And I am going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2624 and House Bill 3395. We will resume the public hearings on those bills. And with that, I would like to call forward, please, Stan Steele, Wayne Endicott, and Dave Wiley. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
Welcome. Please determine among yourselves who goes first, and please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Witt.
members of the committee. My name is Stan Steele. I reside in Corvallis, Oregon. I am the president of the Oregon Outdoor Council. We appreciate the opportunity to come before you today to discuss what we feel are two very important and significant bills that will allow the state of Oregon to return to effective science-based management of two extremely neat creatures, bears and cougars. Oregon has had a long history, obviously, of managing those in a completely different style than what we currently do. For a long, long time, bears and cougars were looked at as just simply a predator and something that we needed to control to a population that was actually very, very significantly reduced from probably what was here before pre-European occupation. And obviously that was at the result of what they do. Cougars and bears by nature are carnivores. And with that came the conflict of what our pioneer forefathers are trying to achieve, just life subsistence. Well, things have changed, and as that bounty system was removed in the early 60s, we went into a game mammal status, which was incidentally promoted by one of the very groups that we're trying to say shouldn't have the right to pursue or actually hunt these animals with dogs. Hound hunters led the charge in the 67 legislature to have cougars made into a big game mammal. And I think it's ironic that now we're worrying about whether they're fit stewards of one of our animals that we all really enjoy. Both these bills allow the people to have a voice. I think that's extremely important, and I think Representative Krieger brought it very well to Representative Gomberg's attention, that things do change. There's not a question that we review legislation, we update laws, we update Oregon administrative rules. Gosh, I've been involved in hundreds of the updates of administrative rules in my former profession as a fish and wildlife officer. But the key thing is these gives us an opportunity to control a burgeoning cougar population in Oregon. And if someone says that the complaints are going down, I would really like them to take the time to contact their local fish and wildlife biologist. On the back of the handout that I gave you, you will see a document issued by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and it was just issued on the 5th of this past month of this year. What's interesting to me was I started working fish and wildlife in Benton County, Oregon, the ALC unit number 18 in 1973. Cougar were not something that we even heard about. They didn't even make the radar screen. There was hound hunting going on for bear, very extensive hound hunting. Look at what county and what unit now leads the state of Oregon in cougar removal. In other words, that's all hunting mortalities, all types of mortality. The ALC unit, a valley unit that has lost deer population from 40 deer per square mile down to 8 and 10. With that loss, the game population has also came an extreme loss of revenue. What's going on? Well, we know we've had a habitat loss. We know that there's been a real change in the Northwest Forest Plan. But what most important is we've had a lot of combinations of disease, habitat loss, and now increased predation. And we're going to come into what's widely recognized and science reviewed as what's the term a predator pit. We're getting some populations to the point where they will not be able to respond in populations of ungulates. The state of Oregon is losing literally millions of dollars a year by trying to make sure that our ungulates are protein for an enlarging predator base. With that, I'm going to close. I think that one of the key things that was said, though, that I really do appreciate, is let's do base this on science. The research is abundant across the board. I mean, you can go to Utah, you can go to Idaho, you can Google cougar predation and cougar impacts, and you will be just absolutely amazed at the research that's out there. We do have a problem. It is a human safety problem. There's a great book that was written called Beast in the Garden on Boulder, Colorado. We are mirroring that book. We are just shadowing what went on in that book. Our population of cougar is rising, and no, there hasn't been a deadly encounter in Oregon yet. But it's definitely when is the larger question. Proper management has to have proper tools. The most effective tool for bear and cougar is hunting with dogs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Dave Wiley, and I'm a volunteer for Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. I live in Sublimity, Oregon, and I'm here to speak on the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's behalf today. The mission of the foundation is to ensure the future of elk, other wildlife, and their habitat, and our hunting heritage. And Stan Steele stole a lot of my thunder, so I won't reiterate. However, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation is widely known and strongly supports science-based wildlife management and the use of hounds in hunting cougars and bears. Professional wildlife managers have long recognized the use of hounds as the most effective tool for controlling cougar and bear populations. I'd like to point out that sportsmen of the state of Oregon do fund the wildlife management of the state, and I'm quite certain that they're very willing to pay for the opportunity to hunt cougars and bears with hounds. And with that, I'll close. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Morning.
Good morning. Chair Witt, Chair Escobar, for the record, my name is Wayne Endicott. I'm Vice President of Oregon Bow Hunters. I'm here representing my membership today. Of course, our membership is concerned with opportunity. I mean, that's our number one goal, is to have opportunity in the field, you know, for bow hunting. And, you know, I don't want to reiterate a lot of history, but in 94 when we lost Measure 18, I think, you know, records will show that our bear and cougar population was at the highest it was ever in history. And since then, yesterday I did some research. ODFNW has some great resources for harvest statistics. And harvest statistics, because we check lions in, we have the statistics up online from 02 to 09, we harvested about 300 cats. Now, that included problem cats that Wildlife Services took, as well as the cats that the sportsmen's harvest. In 2010, it jumped to 481. In 11, it was 506. In 2012, we harvested 521 cats. To date, in 2013, we're at 81 cats. I'm going to tell you one quick cougar story. I grew up in a professional trapping family. My father was a professional trapper, as well as involved in a corporate agricultural farms, and we trapped in the wintertime, as much recreational as professional. But I inherited the great gift of knowing how to become a leg hold, snare, trapping individual. And since then, I own an archery shop. I've owned an archery shop for 24 years, but I respond to problem, you know, cougar reports, and as an agent, you can sign up for that individual as a private property owner. I sign up as an agent, and I can remove those animals, you know, using, you know, trapping methods. An individual called me 2 years ago, and he had lost 3 pack goats. Now, pack goats are different than regular goats in that they weigh about 200 pounds. He had 3 goats that he was putting in the barn because one of them had gotten scratched up pretty badly. He had a boombox playing in this barn of one of the local radio stations 24/7. This cat came in and removed all 3 of these goats in 2 evenings, buried one in the pasture, and the other 2 we never ever found, cleared a regular 4.5-foot fence with those 200-pound goats, 2 of them, and the other one was buried in the pasture. Now, I removed that cat in a short period of time because he came to feed on the last third goat that was buried in the pasture. But that's just one, and I live in Lane County. And, you know, our membership a year ago, Eric Rickerson visited our membership at our convention and with ODFNW, and Eric testified to us that only 2 management units in the state of Oregon met management objectives on deer and elk. And, you know, with that, I'm on, you know, ODFNW's list for reports. And the 2012 wolf management report that I received on March 8th, 2013, in the 41-page report, it directly cites cougar In a 41-page report, 222 times it reports that cougar are to blame, you know, for deer and elk populations. In fact, in just the very second paragraph, it says, in the western rim, cougar appear to be the primary limiting factor to deer and elk recruitment and population growth, as black bear contribute as well to calf mortality. And as well, cougar are devastating on adult mule deer occurring, you know, with their fawning periods. So, you know, ODF&W, I think the science is there. They've done their research. We have removal of cougar in four units that we are paying wildlife services and agents to remove cougar in Winnehaw, Warner unit, Steens, and Ukiah right now. You know, like, and I don't want to reiterate what has already been spoken about, but, you know, the freedoms that have taken away from the general public and the tools out of the toolbox with ODF&W are very necessary. And, you know, Peter DeFazio has had a lot to say about wildlife services. He says they're not necessary, they're not working. In fact, I watched an interview online the other day where he said, you know, we're spending $60 billion nationwide a year for wildlife services and the coyote population is continuing to increase. The problem is we've removed the tools out of the toolbox for the general public to hunt with hounds and use bait on bear, and in such we have tremendous problems, you know, with predatorization that are coming down into our local areas. And, you know, to say that wildlife services isn't as effective, wildlife services is very needed, but it, you know, with the overpopulation and explosion, like, you know, with our harvest statistics that you can see through ODF&W's harvest statistics on cougar, you know, the wildlife services is just addressing the problem cats. And, you know, the explosion that we've had in the state with bear and cougar problems is like wildlife services, you know, it'd be the equivalent of Stan and I playing the Miami Heat and trying to score a point right now, you know, because they are dealing with such a huge overexplosion that the cats are moving down into all our local areas. Lane County, KVAL ran a story in Lane County about all the cats that we're seeing inside of city limits in Springfield. Right now we have one cat that is presently, you know, occupying about 6 or 7 acres of a vacant lot right inside of city limits, and everybody's viewing this cat. And they did a story here on it. And we've had, 4 years ago we had over 4 cats killed within inside of city limits in the city of Springfield. I mean, this is an incredible problem. Lions, they're an incredible animal. They're a survivor. They can survive, you know, and they have a tremendous amount of animals that they can survive on. And I'm kind of going on a rant, and I'm going to close with just that our membership would like to see these tools returned to ODF&W and to the general public, and that these freedoms would be returned to the general public, you know, for their presence, and not copy the European model of paying to remove problem animals. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. All of your testimonies. Questions or comments? Representative Krieger, please.
I hope the committee would look carefully about the Oregon Outdoor Council, the people that make up the board, and also the partners that are involved, because they're going to end up very, very shortly, if they aren't already, the most significant gathering of natural resource users, people, landowners, who really want to see science drive management. And we're going to continue to work towards that. And I really appreciate the fact that Stan and the other people involved are going to continue to work. The whole issue around predation has not been addressed in Oregon. And we've had the discussion just the other day about cormorants taking 50% of our fish, and nobody was paying any attention to it. I'm talking about salmon and steelhead. Similar up to 80% on antelope fawns. Did we finally go in there and did something about that? It is the number one thing right now next to habitat, and we have to have tools. There's a place for all of them. I want some of them even on my tree farm, but I just don't want too much company all the time.
additional questions or comments? Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony. With that, I'd like to call forward, please, Jane Miller, Scott Beckstead, and Rhett Lawrence.
Good
Good morning to each of you, and welcome to our committee.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity to address our cougar population here in Oregon. My name is Jane Miller, and I represent Oregon Cougar Action Team, a 501c3 educational foundation dedicated to the preservation of Oregon's cougar and the ecosystems they sustain. I am also a cattle rancher's daughter, and I am still ranching here in the valley, right next to Representative Springer's district. And yes, I've had cougar in my life. And I am living testimony that you do not die because you see a cougar or because they walk past you. Since I was 5 years old, I've been around cougar. So our issues that I've heard here today are human-caused issues. We have been overkilling our wildlife issues here in Oregon. We've been killing more cougar than we know that we have. And it causes problems. Cougars that are orphaned will wander into communities because they have not been trained to live on their own in the wilderness, and they will kill cats, dogs, and livestock because that is the least resistance. They haven't been trained to live in the wilderness. Also, these bills, House Bill 3395 and 2624, are bills designed to introduce hound dogs, also supports Oregon's prolific poaching problem. We have an unaddressed poaching issue here in Oregon that, according to the Oregon State Police stats, exceeds legal killing of all wildlife here in Oregon. And these House bills that introduce hounds supports the poaching problem we have here in Oregon. And we have not handled that issue. It is poaching that's decimating our deer herds and our elk herds, not the cougar, not the wolves. It's poaching. And So, as far as the tree farmers go, tree farmers are allowed to kill up to 5 deer, including the fawns, and keep them. So, you know, on the East Coast, cougar are extinct. And as a result of that, the timber industry is collapsing. So Representative Krieger should be glad that the cougars are doing a job protecting his trees. In the 1960s, we had 200 cougar here in Oregon. They were genetically extinct. And it wasn't just the hound hunters, it was actually the ranchers too who stepped forward and says we need to protect these animals because they are a keystone species that helps keep our ecosystems healthy, and we need a more healthy population of cougar at that time. With regards to the cougars that have shown up in Senator Springer's district, I'm very familiar with that issue. A cougar hair on a bumper of a school bus does not make a cougar. That a single hair is what they found in that bumper. They had no cougar carcass whatsoever. The cougars that were sighted, none were actually able to confirm that they were not dogs. They were ghost stories, and we cannot base sound science on ghost stories. Now, with regards to ODFW's Cougar Management Plan, it's an archaic plan based on arbitrary numbers. It's never been based on sound science. And you cannot have a system work that's not based on sound science. Oregon Cougar Management Plan is a flawed plan, an archaic plan, and it needs to be evaluated. It needs an outside, unbiased peer review, not done by ODFW, to ensure that the voters' voice is being upheld. Measure 18 was voted in twice by the Oregonians, and the path of least resistance is to follow the voters' will. We need better science to back up a better cougar management plan. And right now, Oregon's cougar management plan is a failed plan with a history of failed policies that are rooted in a grossly inaccurate and decades-old data. It supports these bills support Oregon's prolific poaching issues, and it's also very abusive to the hound dogs. I have a technician that sits on our board. She's a vet tech. She says some of these dogs, if they make it into the vet, are not savable. And these dogs tear apart cougar cubs. They tear apart pregnant cougars. It's an inhumane and unnecessary practice that, if it were done in a dog pit with dog fighting, would be outlawed. And we cannot control the poachers behind these bills. Of the 55,000 cattle that die each year here in Oregon, 3,000 of them die from natural predators. Of that, 1% from wolves. And cougar and bobcat combined kill less cattle than pet domestic dogs. I lost 50 head of sheep to pet domestic dogs. That's never been addressed. That never hits the news. It's easy to blame a predator when a dog has really done it. So our information is skewed and inaccurate, and Oregonians and the voters who voted on this bill deserve the truth. I'm tired of it. I have been here since 2006. My hair was dark when I started here. The only thing that's changed is my hair color. We're still addressing the same kinds of bills here that make no sense and offer nothing to Oregonians. They offer money to a small group of people who want to go out and kill cougar and bears with hounds. It's profitable to them. It's not profitable to our ecosystem. It's not profitable to the voters who vote it, and it's not honest. It isn't. To go behind the voters' back and try and change these bills is just simply not above reproach. And it's not the right way to manage our ecosystems and our wildlife. Now, I'd like to show you a DVD about Oregon's flawed cougar management plan. I worked with an investigative reporter at Channel 2 News. And I'm going to run that really quick. If you can hit that little button here. There you go.
Do you want to do that?
Okay. Yeah.
And then Central Oregon is opening deep wounds between animal rights activists and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
K2's Tom Jensen is here with continuing coverage of the little cat and that controversy. Tom?
And it's a controversy over how and why these cats are killed and what some say is a plan to do it secretly, not scientifically. She's called Lucky.
Turn around.
A four-month-old cougar kitten, now an unlucky statistic of what animal rights activists say is a broken plan.
This is wrong. The Oregon Cougar Management Plan is a bad plan.
Jane Miller is trying to make a difference.
Good girl. Good girl.
Not exactly your typical mountain lion lover. Miller grew up a rancher's daughter and still raises cattle today. From her farm near Turner, Miller created the Oregon Cougar Action Team and an organized fight to save the big cats. A fight that's taking dead aim at the 2006 Oregon Cougar Management Plan. The plan, says Miller, allows far too much hunting. The killing of 3,000 cats over a five-year period. Many of them female cougars with kittens who are left orphaned.
Abandoned. And chronically, tragically, and the numbers are going to increase.
In the area where Lucky was killed, Zone E of the plan, 128 cougars have been killed so far this year. 102 by hunters. Was Lucky the orphan of a hunter-killed cougar?
We have not, to my knowledge, had any females cougars checked in from this area that would indicate that a hunter killed the female.
But according to this report obtained by K2, 69 of the 128 cougars killed in Zone E this year were females.
I don't think that I'm being told the truth about what actually happened to this cat. I think
Miller says secrecy about cougar kittens facing euthanization is built right into the management plan, something ODFW denies.
No, we'll talk about euthanization with people, that it is something that in the best interest in the of the animal that you might have to utilize.
But under the heading cougar kitten handling procedures, ODFW employees are told all public contact and media attention will be avoided.
I mean, why the big secrecy?
Secrets opponents of the cougar management plan say are killing more mother cougars and their kittens every year.
ODFW Wildlife Division.
One last thing I'd like to talk to you about, the population count. Since 2006, I've been informed that that Oregon's had a population count of 6,000 cougar. That's not biologically possible to still have 6,000 cougar now. The state of Washington adopts the same hunting plan as Oregon, and their cougar population has dropped to about 1,600. State of California bans hunting cougar for decades. They have a population of 4,000 cougar, and it's declining. Now, if we have 6,000 cougar, I don't know why they're not crossing the border to California, because it's sunnier, warmer, more open space, and they don't have to check their food in at the border. So we're not being told the truth. Oregonians are not out there pecking with the chickens. We deserve the truth, we deserve better science, and we need an outside unbiased peer review of our cougar management plan and an accurate cougar count in order to have data that is responsible data. You're right, we don't have a good cougar management plan, we don't have responsible data, and it's time we do. So I would ask that you vote against these bills, because the voters have voted twice to ban hound hunting for good reasons, and because we need to clean up the Oregon Cougar Management Plan and get better science behind it. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I live in Sutherland, North Douglas County, the heart of cougar country here in Oregon, here to offer testimony in strong opposition to House Bills 2624 and 3395. I'm going to sort of cut to the chase here because I know your time is limited. I'd like to direct your attention to the handout that I provided. On the back side of this document is a graph from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife showing their cougar mortality data for 2012. I'd like to point out, members of the committee, that cougar complaints in Oregon are at an all-time low since Measure 18 was passed. And in fact, there has been a steady decrease since 1999, a steady decrease in the number of cougar complaints in Oregon. The number of cougar tags sold has increased 100 times from 560 in 1993 to over 50,000 in 2012. Contrary to previous testimony, hunters are now killing far more cougars without the use of hounds than they killed in before Measure 18 was passed. Total cougar mortality is twice what it was, over twice what it was before Measure 18 was passed. You are being asked to consider overturning the will of Oregon's voters. Oregon voters passed Measure 18 and then 2 years later overwhelmingly rejected Measure 34, which would have repealed Measure 18. And I would note that there are some counties that voted no on Measure 18 but voted no on Measure 34. So just because a particular county or district voted against Measure 18 does not mean that they support repealing the will of the voters. I want to close by making very clear what the voters said. The voters did not say that they don't want problem cougars and problem bears controlled with these methods. What they said was that they do not want these methods used for sport. The bill was written to allow wildlife managers to use these methods to control problem animals that are causing specific problems. But these bills go far beyond that. And they allow the use of dogs and bait for sport. And the voters of Oregon have said that is unacceptably cruel, it is unacceptably unsporting, and it does not reflect the values of Oregonians. I would urge you to vote no on both these bills, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Scott, and truly appreciate your enabling us to try and have enough time to get through our entire witness list. Thank you. Good morning, Rhett.
Morning. Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm the conservation director for the state chapter of the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club, here testifying today on behalf of 20,000 members and supporters in the state of Oregon. You've got my written testimony. I won't go through all the points there, just hit some of the highlights that have already been addressed from previous presenters. I did want to say at the outset, though, that the Sierra Club is not and has never been an anti-hunting organization. We have many hunters in our ranks, and you know are not opposed to to hunting. We decided this session not to oppose the extension of the sunset from House Bill 2390, which would authorize the continued use of agents from ODF&W to hunt bear and cougar. So just want to get us on the record as not being anti-hunter. Again, just want to reiterate, as you've already heard, ODF&W's own numbers seem to suggest that there's not really a problem that's not being addressed already by the by the systems that we have in place. And again, would urge you to respect the will of the voters who voted on this twice and who have rejected the use of using bait and dogs for sport and hunting cougar and bear. So with that, I happy to take any questions, and I appreciate you allowing me to testify today.
Thank you very much, and also appreciate your enabling us to stay on track in terms of time as well. Representative Unger.
Quick question, Chair Witt. Scott, I'm interested in your perspective on the numbers here on complaints. It's a interesting kind of rapid rise and then steady decline. And I don't know if you have, besides the numbers, if there's, from your perspective, I'm sure others will have different perspectives, but why the up and down?
Yes, quickly, Chair Witt, Representative Unger, I suspect many of the complaints are politically driven. We tend to see a sudden burst of media reports of problem cougars shortly before bills like this are introduced. There has been a drumbeat of legislation proposed in every single legislative session to ramp up the war on cougars, and I believe that that these numbers reflect that. But I also think that there is a problem with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife system for reporting complaints. They're unverified, they're unscientific, and I suspect that what these numbers reflect is the fact that like all top predators, cougars tend to be self-regulating in their populations. The best cougar management professionals out there are the big dominant tom cougars. They are the ones who do the best job of keeping the population in check and balanced with the prey base.
Thanks, Scott.
Representative Reardon.
I had to ask somebody, how do you get an accurate count of cougars?
Anyone?
Well, I would, Chair Witt, Representative Reardon, what you don't do is count the number of cougars in a zone and then extrapolate that number statewide and assume that because there's 300 cougars down by Medford, that means that there's 300 cougars in downtown Portland. The top cougar biologists in this country have looked at the Oregon Cougar Management Plan and have unanimously rejected the population data. It is scientifically flawed because it rests on extrapolation based on isolated counts.
And Representative Reardon, we're going to have testimony, I think, from ODF&W later today, and you may want to ask that question to them as well. Anything else? Folks, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, to those who are to follow, we've had one panel for, one panel against. These were the lead-off witnesses. We've allowed them to establish the record and take as long as they needed to establish that record. From this point forward, I'm going to ask everyone's cooperation. Please limit your testimony to a maximum of 3 minutes. And please, if you agree with comments that have already been put on the record, please just state so. If you have additional new information, you can note that as well. But to the extent that you can help me get through all the folks that have come to testify today, I would greatly appreciate it, and I know that all the people behind you that want to testify will appreciate it as well. So with that, I'm going to call up next, please, Al Elkins, George Houston, and Pam Bell. So again, if you can summarize your comments to a maximum of 3 minutes, it will be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. We're in support of what the first panel said. We support both bills. The one thing that I think I will bring up that others may have not touched on so far is you've looked at all the scientific, you've heard a lot of the science relating public safety, depredation on domestic animals and livestock, and declining numbers of deer and elk. One thing we need to look at in relation to the state is that some of the counties are now in the position of not being able to receive the funding that they used to get from wildlife services to manage as part of their management of cougars, bears, that type of thing, predation. And as those funds diminish, we need to help those counties out and establish, I think, a pilot project such as the one Bill speaks to that would allow, give them another tool to manage, is what I'm saying. So what we need to look at is what today is saying and what the lack of funding is going to do to those counties, and they are already telling us they're in dire need of help. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and appreciate your testimony and the brevity as well. Good morning. Welcome to our committee.
My name's Pamela Bell. I own Pacific Meadows Alpacas in Junction City, and I've done everything I can to get this down to 3 minutes, and I just can't do it.
Okay, well.
But I'll read fast.
Okay.
I also support the, I'm also a member of Oregon Outdoor Council, and I support the House Bills 2624 and 3395. We've been living the most horrible nightmare since May 2009 when cougars started killing our alpacas. We've lost 19 total in the last 4 years. Having the ability to use dogs to hunt the predators that killed these alpacas as well as other livestock and wildlife throughout Oregon is not a guarantee, but it helps balance the odds. We've had dogs out within an hour of spotting a cougar near a fresh kill. It was a day we lost 3 in one day. It's not always successful to eliminate the predator, but it puts a fear in the cougars and the bears that they want to avoid the hunters and the dogs. The overpopulation of cougars in the area, as well as the rest of the state, is a serious problem. I tried to get some attention to our problem after hikers reported being stalked on Spencer's Butte in Eugene. We only have 7 alpacas killed at this time, but after calling all the news stations, we found out ODFW was saying we were isolated and they wouldn't cover it. We aren't isolated. Everywhere I go, I'm always finding someone who has a story about a cougar sighting, kill, stalking, tracks, etc. I've heard a cougar thumping their tail on the roof of a house in Eugene, multiple sightings near Churchill High School, as well as one impaled on a fence 1 mile west of my home in Eugene. I've even been told of a guy on 26th and Chambers who was told by the Eugene police to be careful that a cougar was spotted in his area. He didn't seem to care. I've called the local officials. I've even called Rob Handy, who was my county commissioner at the time. I was trying to find support and find funding available to get the county trapper to help us. He very specifically told me I didn't know what I was talking about, that there was no money available for a trapper, even if I needed one, and that a cougar in no way could possibly kill our alpacas. Alpacas were too big. I told him I had reported llamas being, I had heard of reports of llamas being killed, calves, a trained bird dog, horses were attacked. I knew my predator was cougars, that a professional trapper confirmed it. He still disagreed with me. Then I offered to bring a carcass down so he could tell me what killed it, since he didn't think it was a cougar. While reporting one of my kills, I sarcastically asked our local wildlife biologist when I was going to see the whites of the wolf's eyes on the farm. He told me to expect one within 2 years. That 2 years is this May, and the rumors of wolves have been sighted 20 miles west of us. I've gone from being a person who was grossed out near a dead animal to the local alpaca coroner. This whole alpaca experience changes you. It's disturbing that when you come up to a dead alpaca or a deer, you can evaluate its body, pull its head up, turn it over, look for wounds, check for dislocated vertebrae, and evaluate the rectum to know if it was trauma by death of cougars, other predators, or of natural causes. To be so familiar with the smell of blood and death, to be so experienced doing this is frankly disgusting when I realized it was becoming so easy and routine. It shouldn't be routine, and it shouldn't be normal. The loss of each of those animals haunts you, especially when you realize you're waking up screaming or hitting the wall, fighting off the cougars in your nightmares.
Pamela, could you please close?
I just think that there's been too many people that think that we don't have a problem here, and it's out of control. And as for the reports, I do want to make this comment. for every reported attack, I called Fish and Wildlife every single time if I was being snarled at, which we've been stalked, snarled at, growled at. It's a nightmare. I reported over 20, and I had a lawsuit last year, and I called the Fish and Wildlife and said, I need a copy of this so I can take it to the judge. He had a copy of 6. I called 20 times. So the reports are absolutely inaccurate. They're not keeping good reports. You know, I don't know what's going on, but it's just out of control.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, Vice Chair McEwen, and Esquivel. My name is George Houston, past president of Oregon Chapter Foundation for North American Wild Sheep. We're very much in favor of House Bill 2624 and 3395. Our membership are extremely concerned about the levels of active predation of elk, mule deer, and other wildlife, and the consequent loss of hunter opportunity via hunting tag reduction in the state of Oregon. The economic loss each year to the small towns and communities throughout the state are staggering. Next time you're driving through small town Oregon, please continue to notice the closed and boarded up commercial occupancies that used to contain thriving service delivery services, that is, hotels, grocery stores, gas stations, and cafes, to the migrant hunters, and for that matter, fishermen that used to drive 2 to 7 hours or longer from home, usually with their family members, to spend a week or two pursuing deer and elk in the outback areas of Oregon. It's our view that the effective demise of many small town business locations in every corner of rural Oregon that we have all grown to enjoy in past years can absolutely be traced to annual loss of hunter and fisher opportunity connected with dollars that are spent in the local communities that actively support hunting and fishing opportunities. The sponsors and supporters of both House Bill 2624 and 3395 are to be commended and congratulated for their insight in looking at the problems of the rural communities and trying to effectively put some solutions together that make sense. The continuing impact of rampant predation by cougar, bear, and other predators, terrestrial, aerial, and aquatic, are indirectly causing our continuing challenges. Thanks for your support on this issue. Any questions or concerns?
Thank you very much for your testimonies. Let's see if there are any questions from the committee. I'm not seeing any. Thank you all very, very much. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Catherine Cohn. And is there anyone else? I have room at the witness stand for two more witnesses that would be opposed to the bills. Is there anyone that would like to come forward at this time? All right, thank you. Please proceed. Welcome to our committee.
Yes, thank you, Chair Witt, and all the other members. My name is Catherine Kane, and I'm a retired teacher and a past director of the Northwest Cougar Action Trust, and I've been giving testimony to the ODFW and the legislature since the late 80s about the need to protect cougars instead of kill them. Can you hear me okay, Republican Thompson?
Yes. If you actually move back from the microphone a little bit, it will distort less.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay, good key. All right, I'm asking you to vote no on these bills for 10 specific reasons. The first one is that they're frivolous bills that are veiled attempts to overthrow Measure 18, which is working just fine. There's already a provision in that bill for taking out any unwanted cats, and they are frivolous because I realize you guys have an overwhelming amount of work that we are expecting you to do, and these are the same small bunch of vested interests who represent only about 1% of Oregon voters, and I'll tell you how I can extrapolate that, because there's only 10% of people, 5 to 10% that are involved in hunting are paying hunting fees anyhow. And the only people that can hunt cougar and bear are houndmen. They need to pay pay for whole packs of hounds. They're very expensive to buy, very expensive to maintain and vet. And there's only a very few amount of people that actually are capable of doing this. And they're the same people that have been coming here for 20 years, giving you these same rearrangements of the same bills. Anyhow, there's absolutely no need to change Measure 18. It's working fine. And monetarily, this is just crazy talk. We are completely out of money. We need to be realistic. They've wasted hundreds of thousands of dollars. They have no scientific proof that what we're doing helps in any way. And I need to share some biologic facts because Scott alluded to this. It's unsustainable to kill the apex predators of any ecosystem because they serve a very important function. They actually help and make sturdier elk and deer herds, and that's been proven by a lot of OSU research lately. And it's also really these extrapolated numbers that they've just fabricated, ODFW has, they call it Monte Carlo, but they just made it up and shuffled around a computer model. It's impossible to have too many cougars. As Scott pointed out, the Big Tom keeps every single other young cougar out. When you kill that Big Tom, which is what those houndmen are trying to do, they're all trophy hunters or paying to get somebody else's, making money on it, they are taking out the Big Tom. That actually destabilizes the whole drainage because there's four or five females around him. And one of my most important points is this would create a public safety threat for people living in and around cougar habitat because it destabilizes it. It would be inviting these young transient cougars who we know are documented as being the problem. The next one is voters would be very offended,
Catherine,
that you have voted to overturn
Catherine, could you please move to close?
So I can't say 10 things?
Well, if you could read off the 10 items quickly.
Okay. Voters will be offended that you've overturned something they've passed two times. 3395 is a blank check for slaughter. It's completely unscientific. It would encourage poaching. You need to be aware that there's an international black market in bear gallbladders, and the only people selling bear galls are the documented poachers like Ray Hilsman and Johnny Young. You all know those names. They're repeat offenders. They're out there now. They still have their dogs. There's a lot of money in this, and you would be promoting, the legislature would be promoting poaching. We already have a reputation nationally as a wide-open poaching place. They called Hilsman the Al Capone of poaching. We don't want these people here. They're the ones that we have proof that they are doing illegal things in the woods. And please don't make a county rights effort where we got 36 different counties with 36 different rules. So I'll end my testimony there, but suffice to say, there's been decades of strong public support for maintaining Measure 18. It is working just fine. Please do not cave into a small group of voters because the rest of the voters will be very infuriated. Thank you very much for letting me speak.
Thank you very much. Would you care to take any questions if there are any?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Committee members? You guessed correctly. Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate that. Okay, next I'm going to call up Pat Mundy, Jim Welch, and Ian Tolleson, please. Good morning to each of you, and welcome, and please, if you can summarize your statements, it would be greatly appreciated.
Chair Witt and committee members, Jim Welch here, speaking for State Grange. They have had policy on supporting these types of legislation in the hunting of cougar and baiting bear for over 10 years, probably close to 20 years. We realize that both of these approaches are unique, and whether or not, you know, the management objective for cougar in this state, or even for bear, is totally accurate. We know that we have regional problems, pockets of problems, and we need the unique tools, our approach that these bills provide. And we know we've had a problem being successful in gaining support throughout the legislature in gaining a unique tool. But we'd be very supportive of either one of these, and we thank you for the opportunity to provide our testimony.
Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, Ian Tollison, Oregon Farm Bureau. Thank you for hearing these bills. They are important to us. I wanted to talk about House Bill 3395 shortly. Reading from the bill, it says the pilot program's primary goals are to reduce cougar conflicts and to assess cougar populations. I think those are two worthy goals, but the assess the populations is something that I think is vitally important of how we move forward with this growing problem. And I would like to point out to the committee that the Willamette Week had an article on March 26th about a cougar sighting in Southwest Portland. I've been to Portland. I don't live there, but I've never seen a cougar before, and it's quite troubling to hear that we are starting to see some in such a urban area. These cougars are moving into more populated areas, and they are doing damage with my members' livestock and property. We feel the pilot project is a good way to move forward, a calculated step by an agency that you guys all have oversight with. So we would appreciate your support, and thank you for hearing the bills.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that.
Good morning. Representative Witt, members of the committee, my name is Pat Mundy. I work for Leupold and Stevens Incorporated up in Portland, and I'm also on the Oregon Outdoor Council Advisory Board. So our biggest reason to be here today is that the loss of big game tags in the state of Oregon over the last 15 or 20 years, largely due to cougar and bear depredation, has had a negative impact on hunter recruitment in the state, obviously. And we manufacture optical instruments, rifle scopes, spotting scopes, accessories and mounting hardware up there in, outside of Portland. We employ about 700 people. So for us, there's a big economic consequence, as well as the basically the protection of a way of life that we rely on to make a living. So in addition to everything everybody else has said today, I just wanted to make sure that got out there. There's a big and vibrant outdoor industry in the state of Oregon, and it depends a lot on sport hunting for its success. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any extremely brief questions? Not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Frank Hupp, Bill Hoyt, and Dale Ballard. Good morning, gentlemen. If you could keep your comments as brief as possible, we might be able to get through all the witnesses today. Go ahead. Please proceed.
Chairman Witt, fellow committee members, the management of the state of Oregon needs to
Frank,
be
would
done.
You please introduce yourself?
Oh, excuse me. I'm Frank Hupp. I'm president of Columbia County Chapter of Oregon Hunters Association, and I represent approximately 300 members in Columbia County.
Thank you.
And the management of the Oregon needs to be done by professional wildlife managers with sound biological data, not by special interest anti-hunting groups. For game management, there is not a one-size-fits-all solution. Every separate area of the state is unique and needs to be addressed and have local controls where possible. And if you don't believe me, go to some place in northeastern Oregon and compare what goes on in northwestern Oregon. They are different, unique, ecological places. It has been stated that the voters have spoken on Measure 18 and the repeal of Measure 18. And that, to some extent, is true. The voters that have spoken are from the Willamette Valley, and that encompasses approximately 75% of all of the voters of the state of Oregon. So whatever the voters of the state of Oregon say doesn't necessarily have what's going on as the best interest. If you have a ranch in northeastern Oregon, you have a completely different need than you do in the Willamette Valley. Now, bears, cougars, and wolves are beautiful animals. Do you want your dogs and cats in the Beaverton area to be hunted by bears, cougars, and wolves? That is what's coming to this. And I believe, and so do my constituents believe, that these measures 2624 and 3395 need to be passed. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has to have the opportunity to be able to manage game based upon sound scientific data.
Thank you very much, Frank. Appreciate you keeping us on schedule. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Chair Witt, committee members, for the record, my name is Dale Ballard. I live at 802 Tolliver Road in Molalla, Oregon. I'm a lifelong Oregon hunter. I recently joined OHA as a life member, past chapter president here in Salem. And I'm going to give you kind of a more personal perspective after years of hunting when I've seen good and I've seen not so good. Not so good is exactly where we are right now. People are not going to keep purchasing hunting licenses and tags to go on camping trips. That's just not going to happen. The result will be a loss of funds to ODFW, curtailing the agency's ability to manage. The long-range impacts of which are bleak. People, you know, hunters and fishers are helping to finance this agency with a lot of dollars. And if they cannot manage and they cannot improve the opportunities for hunters, it's a downward spiral. Hunters and fishers a few years ago supported the agency's budget and increased the fees upon ourselves to give us more opportunity. And in fact, we have received less opportunity. I don't blame the agency. I blame the handcuffing bureaucracy that they have to try to manage. Elk and deer numbers are down, resulting in loss of tags and loss of opportunity. Oregon uses a controlled hunt permit system. It takes years, maybe a decade or more, to get a quality hunt. Myself, I will probably not see, there's a curve that if you look out long range, some of those hunts, even though I've got several points, some of those hunts, I will never outlive my ability to draw one of those tags. I want to support ODFW and will continue to buy and wait for my chance to get my coveted tag. But in the meantime, I'm taking my hunts out of state. I go to Montana. I have family there. I spend thousands of dollars. I just didn't keep it in the state, and I think the businesses here would like to do that as well. I'll close by saying the testimony offered by HSUS stated more cougars are being killed by hunters. I just ask yourselves why. Could it be that cougar numbers are way out of balance? I believe it is. So with that, I'll close and urge you a strong yes vote on these two measures. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Bill.
Chair Witt, Vice Chair McCune, Vice Chair Escobar. My name is Bill Hoyt. I'm the legislative chair for the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, immediate past president, and I'm here to support these two bills. I would like to give you a little brief encounter last week ago Saturday night. A week ago Saturday. There were three cougar sightings on my ranch. I'm getting phone calls from truck drivers and other people saying, well, we saw a cat on this side of the freeway. We saw two cats on the other side of the freeway. It was one of the strangest days I've ever experienced since I've been. And I tell you, we never see them. No one ever sees them. They are one of the most stealthy predators there is. I have 9 guard dogs that work in 600 ewes and 300 goats, and they were just going crazy that day. And they were just, it was one of the most surrealistic experiences I've ever had. So the last sighting, I said, we have to do something here. So we went to check on one of the flocks that was up this one draw, and there was a cougar in the act of killing one of the animals. And so we pursued this cat and were able to catch it. Now, that tells me over time that what we have is a problem, not of management. I'm just a cowboy, and I'm not a scientist. But it seems like if I have an agenda, I can find a scientist to support me. And I'm sure that's true on both sides of this issue. And I'm an animal lover, and I'm not an animal hater. I'm not a particularly engaged hunter. I support 60 head of elk on the ranch on almost a continuous basis. If you were to drive to the ranch today, I could take you out there yesterday, and within walking distance, and they never got up. 60 elk laying there. They never were so concerned with the fact that I was there in an ATV, and they never even got out of their beds. So I support wildlife. I'm a particularly concerned individual that supports wildlife of all kinds. But when we get these kind of situations in our county, it would be great if we could do this. If we could, these bills would support the fact that the people could engage in a vote to say, okay, we should hunt. And one more thing I'd like to leave you with: my guard dogs do not have effect on the cougars when they're not hunted by houndsmen. The barking dog is something that alerts these cats. Not every single time that the cats are chased by the houndsmen does it end in the death of the cat. But the cat then gets respect for the barking dog, so it makes my tools in my toolbox with my guard dogs much more effective. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any quick questions for this panel? I'm not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. I'd now like to call up, please, ODF&W. Good morning.
Morning. Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I have Ron Anglin here with me, our Wildlife Division Administrator. And we're passing around some fairly lengthy written comments. Really, it's Cougar 101, I guess, if you will. I'm going to go through this very quickly and just hit some high points and then yield for any questions that you all may have. And you've heard actually much of this earlier today, but I wanted to mention that cougar management in Oregon really began in the mid-1960s. Prior to the mid-1960s, cougars were classified in Oregon by statute as an unprotected predatory animal. We estimate by the mid-1960s that cougar abundance in Oregon was down to about 200 animals. As you might imagine, with 200 animals statewide, complaints, interactions, encounters, depredations were very, very minimal and not really even a factor on the landscape to a great degree. Then in the mid-1960s, the cougar status was changed to a game animal, and authority to manage those populations or that population was given to the then Game Commission, which became the Department of Fish and Wildlife in 1975. But when the Game Commission took over management, they essentially, abundance was so low, they closed and basically protected cougars for a period of years, and then reinitiated very limited hunting opportunities in the early 1970s. And those opportunities continued to expand as the cougar population rebounded from near extirpation in the mid-1960s to what we estimate to be about 3,000 animals in the early 1990s. All through those years, from the early 70s through the early 1990s, the primary method of hunting cougars was with the use of hounds.
Cougars are, as many people have alluded to here, are very secretive animals. Their ability to just go out in the field and encounter a cougar, irrespective of the fact that their abundance is low, but also given their secluded nature, is very difficult. So hunting with hounds was the most effective tool. Cougar tags were fairly expensive. If you'll recall, even in the early 1990s, a cougar tag cost $50. Most people who bought a cougar tag were individuals that were going to use a method that had a high success rate. Most hunters in the field did not have a cougar tag in their pocket for the chance encounter with a cougar. After the passage of ballot measure 18 in 1994, of course, the use of hounds is now prohibited in statute, and the department and the commission has embarked down a path of, in order to harvest cougars, to essentially broaden the seasons. To, in fact, right now where we have a year-round season for cougars, the cougar tag fee is $18. In our last fee cycle, that fee was not raised. In fact, the non-resident fee was reduced to also $18. So we have a large number of individual hunters now in the field with cougar tags. And as the population has continued to grow, just through the sheer probability of encounters in the field, so too has the harvest of cougars. We allow individuals to buy multiple tags now. Individuals who are successful can purchase a second tag. I wanted to then talk a little bit about some research activities that are underway. Of course, it may seem obvious to many, but cougars do have an impact on our big game herds. There are many other parameters in play and factors in play that also affect big game herds. So we've tried to tease out the differences in impact between habitat suitability as well as predation. We have a number of research projects that are either underway or are now completed, looking at things like cow and calf elk suitability or body condition, to look at our low calf survival rates a reflection of poor habitat, or are they a reflection of something else, i.e. predation. And generally, our studies have concluded that habitat is not a factor on our low calf survival rates in many of our elk management units. The commission, as was mentioned earlier, has adopted a cougar management plan. That plan was updated again in 2006. The commission directed us to do a number of things to essentially try and use adaptive management with the use of cougar agents. You had a cougar agent bill here earlier in the session, and we have done that. We have looked at three cougar target areas. One was designed to address human safety and pet conflicts. One cougar target area was designed to see if we could influence the level of complaints associated with livestock depredation, and the other cougar target area was associated with seeing if we could have an influence on calf elk survival in a particular unit. All three of those areas also had controls, control areas nearby where we could monitor measure those results in both areas and see if there was in fact an influence. We, based on our work in those three target areas, we concluded that as it related to human safety and pet conflict, based on our Jackson County area, we were not effective enough at removing cats to have an influence on human safety and pet conflict in that particular area, just due to land ownership and the ineffective nature of our agents there. In the Beulah unit, we were effective at reducing livestock depredation, and in the Heppner unit, we were quite effective at increasing the calf elk survival. You'll find in this document there's a table that highlights how many cougars we removed in those target areas, what the dollars were expended associated with those removals, and then also describes with the commission's blessing, we have moved on to four new units where we're now using agents to remove cougars. With that, Mr. Chair, that is as quickly as I can highlight 10 pages, and I apologize for that, but happy to answer any questions.
Appreciate that very, very much. Thank you. That's very helpful. I appreciate your brevity. Also, the depth of your report. Questions or comments for the department?
Representative Unger.
Thanks, Chair Witt. Kirk, maybe you can shed some insight from the department's perspective on these numbers that we were showing about complaints and what your best guess is. And I don't know if you got this sheet from Scott, but it kind of shows a rise of complaints from 93 up to 99, where it went from 300 to about 1,100, and then a slow but steady decline back down to 300. And last year seems like a real anomaly, you know, just a little bit less than 300
sure.
for the first time since 93.
Sure. Chair Witt, Representative Unger, I think certainly complaints reference sightings as well as actual interactions with animal in terms of livestock depredation or other factors. These do not represent a scientific survey. This is your classic poll, internet poll, if you will, where people responded because they chose to. We didn't query them. They responded to us. I think there's a number of things that go on socially. Ballot measure 18 passed. There's a lot of rhetoric, a lot of worry. People maybe are more apt to report conflicts or sightings. And then we've done a lot of work over the years on and you've heard it mentioned here, addressing problem animals, but also educating individuals on cougars, living with cougars, and so I think there's so many factors in play that we don't rely on it real heavily, but it's still important information to view. And I'd ask that Ron Anglin might want to add something to that if he wants to. Okay.
Quick follow-up, what statistics do you use as kind of your core statistics to evaluate whether or not we're doing a good job in this area?
Sure. So, Chair Witt, Representative Unger, we do have population models in place that essentially give us the abundance of cougars. We have the state divided up into cougar management zones, if you will, where we have quotas in place to not exceed that particular harvest level. We certainly track damage. And complaints, too. But, Ron, you want to add something to that?
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin. We, Kurt's right, we have originally we developed population estimates, if you will, based on cougar densities by management zone, and the densities varied, and that was based on our research within the state and also what we've been able to glean out of the literature. Since then, we've moved to more of a population model when all the intricacies of a model and the pros and cons. We continue to work to update that model. We have a new model not in place in use yet, but in development through the University of Nebraska, and we've been doing genetic work that validates our modeling efforts and ties in with our research work that we've been doing in Northeast Oregon and Southwest Oregon.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you. Representative Reardon?
Not sure I followed everything you just said, Ron. To be honest, we've heard a lot of question here about the science, and it sounds like you just addressed the science. If you could do anything, and I'm not saying you necessarily agree with that you would, but if you could improve the science, what would you do?
Chair Witt, Representative Reardon, I guess one of the dreams of mine would be that we'd probably have to use dogs to do it, but we'd go into each one of our management zones and we'd collect genetic samples out of each one of the management zones through an intensive sampling method where you'd use dogs to tree cats and take what we call a bio dart that you can shoot into the cat, and then the dart drops out and we can do genetic work. And we'd be able with that then to do a more comprehensive update of the models and population estimate. We've done some minor work along those lines and kind of testing some things out in Northeast Oregon to expand it to the whole state. We've been exploring that, but it would be very challenging and very expensive.
So, given he can't really do everything he wants, too expensive, how accurate do you think your population counts are?
Sure. Chair Witt, Representative Reardon, you know, we put pretty wide confidence intervals on it. with what we've got right now in our model. So when we say roughly 6,000 cats, that could be plus or minus 500 or 600 cats on both sides of that. We are in the process of, like I said, developing a new model through the University of Nebraska that would provide some very, or would provide tighter confidence intervals. But again, you know, with all models, until we get it in hand and it's gone through the peer review, we just won't know exactly how that's going to play out and what kind of an estimate it'll give us.
One last one. Got to go to a meeting too. Do you, I'm just hearing all kinds of things, and a lot of this discussion is fairly new to me. Do you think that the problem we're trying to deal with is a problem of people wanting to hunt more, or is it a problem of trying to control a possibly out of control cougar population?
Chair Witt, Representative Reardon, I'm not 100% sure from that standpoint. You know, we manage wildlife,
okay,
and look for a full range of tools for managing wildlife.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further? Gentlemen, a couple of things here. I want to ask you some questions based on testimony that we have heard today. As regards ungulates, I think it was ungulates. True that poaching exceeds legal kills in this state?
Chair Witt, statewide, no, we would not be willing to say that. We have had a couple of specific research projects where we did document poaching a mule deer was close to the same amount as predation, but to expand that statewide, we're not prepared to say that.
Okay. True or not that the Cougar Plan supports poaching?
Chair Witt, I think clearly the Cougar Plan does not support poaching. In fact, the commission went through an intensive rulemaking associated with our use of agents, and in fact, our agents that we utilize that are allowed to use hounds to do work for us go through a rigorous background check, and in fact, if they've had any Fish and Wildlife violation, they are excluded from the program. Many violations are very minor, but they are still excluded from the program. So the commission took a very high road as it relates to utilizing only law-abiding citizens in the program.
Could you tell our committee where in the Cougar Plan the plan allows for the killing of mothers with cubs?
Chair Witt, I think what people are inferring is that we have a year-round season, mm-hmm, and part of the reason for that, and I'll let Ron talk to the cougar biology, but cougars don't have a specific time of year when they are either with kittens or without. So it's very difficult to have any season and guarantee a high likelihood of no mothers with kittens being involved. So I think they're inferring from the length of the season that the commission is endorsing that.
And finally, could you tell me to the best of your knowledge, what the cougar population is in our state today?
Chair Witt and members of the committee, as I think detailed in our testimony on page 4, we do estimate the population to be currently just below 6,000. I can provide you a little more precise number than that, but just below 6,000. So the numbers that people have been utilizing here are consistent with our model population estimate.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Is there anyone who signed up on the witness sheet? I've got half a dozen who I can't get to today and would want to come back for another hearing. All right, with that, I'm going to thank you all very, very much. I apologize that we've run out of time, but I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bills 2624 and 3395. And we will welcome any comments, written opinions, emails, whatever, from any of you who didn't have a chance to testify to add to the record. With that, the committee stands adjourned.
Good job.